it's a lot, mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, there's a tree line breaks in the wide open space.
Hi everyone, this is Austin welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, March 13th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic, seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew and the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and toward this end has two websites: the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How's everybody doing?
Doing well.
We're good, and I want to introduce a visitor that I have today. It is my bed. It is a air bed, an air mattress. It's fancy, and it has busted itself. I don't know what has happened to it, but we have a repairman coming not in time to quiet the bed. So my bed, who I lovingly call Slowly, is going to be in the background, and that's what that noise is. And don't worry about it. Don't worry about a thing. We will talk about it and really enjoy our time with you.
Welcome, Ben. We don't discriminate against
Ben. Good.
All right. We can jump straight into the opening riff, which comes from a Kuo session from September 25th, 1995. Kuo says, "You are within an illusion which insists that you begin with impure and cluttered emotions. All the wisdom and passion that there is lies within. Yet because the spiritual child is young, it is clumsy and awkward. It feels so much love and yearning and wishes so much to be more comfortable, more light and spirit-filled. Yet we say to you that the path is appropriate for each, no matter how wise, who comes into incarnation is the path of impure and confusing desires, and it is within this puzzling atmosphere of emotion and thought within which each is intended to do the work and finds the learning within the incarnation. The Creator to be found is found here, within that sea of confusion and prideful desire that masks the rightful and pure emotion that is hunger and thirst for truth, love, and for beauty."
Thanks, Austin. Oh, how the heart yearns to be truly wise, to be at home at last, relaxed, comfortable. And yet, we do not usually feel that way. I remember as a little girl thinking that there was a magic inside me, and I would see myself in various guises, Princess of Avalon. I loved the old Celtic tales, the fairy tales about Avalon and Arthur. But then I would look at my rag and bone self, and there I was, a little skinny, knock-kneed girl whose glasses were always too big for her face. And who looked pretty ridiculous, unless you're kind. And I knew it. I think we all know these things about ourselves. And few of us have the supreme self-confidence of thinking we're gorgeous and and that everybody thinks we're wonderful, because we're just human and we're not always wonderful. And even if we are, we don't feel wonderful. We feel isolated. As if our real parents had dropped us off on this mud hole of a planet and abandoned us to the craziness all around us. I tried not to let myself be frightened by that, but that was my perception as a child. There was a disorientation. I knew things. I knew that faith was right. I knew that honor was right. I always took the high road, no matter how much it hurt. I always followed my heart, honored my relationships, did my best to be a good person. But I really never have felt justified. I have felt humble and unworthy. And yet there is magic inside me, and there is magic inside you. We are not what we seem. And we are what we do not seem. So I say, follow your heart. Honor your relationships. Always take the high road. And let the devil take the hindmost, because that's the best we can do. Let me comfort you. There will always be times of absolute sustaining joy that comes upon one unaware. There will always be the silence, and we can access that silence the instant we can get away. Doctor's offices, those are good. Waiting rooms in doctor's offices are wonderful places to meditate. Going into the silence, what a blessed thing to have. And whatever your perception of spirit, if you can access that energy within you, oh, how lucky. Use it. Because spirit loves you dearly and will always speak to you in some way when you ask. I love you all. It is a mud hole of a planet, and we are here to clean it up. I'm talking about metaphysical mud. I'm talking about the murk of guilt and grief and pride. Let those go and do your best. I promise that's it. That's all you need to do ever. And it will be enough. Amen.
Thank you, Carla. Moving on to our questions. Our first question comes from our friend Terry Sue. A big shout out to Terry Sue. He's a translator for our Chinese version of the Law of One.
an incredibly good volunteer and host to Gary on his recent tour of Taiwan.
And his question actually has to do with his translation. He gives a Ra quote in which there was a word which Ra uses, and he was wondering about the context and the way that Ra was using it. So I'm going to read the whole quote to give the full context and then read Terry's question. The quote starts with Don asking, if the experience of the mind has sufficiently chosen the right-hand path, as total purity is approached in choosing of the right-hand path, then total imperviousness from the effect of the left-hand catalyst is also approached. Is this correct? Ra says, this is exquisitely perceptive. The seeker which has purely chosen the service to others' path shall certainly not have a variant apparent incarnational experience. There is no outward shelter. Illusion from the gusts, flurries, and blizzards of quick and cruel catalyst. However, to the pure, all that is encountered speaks of the love and the light of the one infinite creator. The cruelest blow is seen with the ambience of challenges offered and opportunities to come. Thusly, the great pitch of light is held high above such an one so that all interpretation may be seen to be protected by light. And so Terry asks, in my initial translation, I took it the word pitch there when Ra says the great pitch of light is held high above such an one. In my initial translation, I took it as a level or frequency of sound. Later, I thought it may be more proper to think of it as the highest point of a structure. Which one is closer to Ra's original intention?
I actually wrote Terry with my opinion, and he hasn't responded to it, so I guess he didn't really think that it was right, but I do. from my background as a lover of fairy tales and the Avalon myth, I was just talking about that. I've read a lot of medieval novels, you know, set in the Dark Ages, and at that time, I believe they used pieces of pine lumber that were, you know, big enough to be, a torch, and I believe they used the pits or the tar to light the pine. So I think they called this instrument, which they use like we use a flashlight, a pitch.
Hmm.
And when you look in the dictionary, I am not sure that it's even there. I really haven't researched it. I just know that if Ra was scurrying around in my mind, he found it. And he loved, or they loved, the older versions of words rather than the modern ones. They tended to use those. So I just have this feeling that that's what it means. If anybody else has any other ideas, please, you know, pitch in.
That makes sense to me. When I was looking for definitions in the dictionary, I did find the archaic use of resin from the type of pine tree, resinous material. So, and considering that Ra talks about holding the pitch above the head, and just that context in general, it seems to make sense that it would be a torch. And then the seeker is protected by the light emitted by that torch that is held above the head. So, like, even visually, that kind of makes sense. Pitch can also mean, like Terry said, the level of frequency of sound or the highest point of a structure, or just more generally the level or intensity of something, quality or state. So the intensity of light, I think, could also work. Considering Ra uses the word great, it could mean, like, an abundant intensity, an abundant level of light. But what you just said, Carla, I think makes a little more sense.
Okay.
Terry, did he ask via email this question? And I had responded to him on my own as well. And I asked him, hey, would you like us to ask this on the show as well? And he said, sure. So, sorry, Carla, I didn't know that you had also responded to him.
Well, I mean, obviously he wasn't satisfied, so I'm glad to discuss it. I'm sure he will appreciate the discussion, because pitch is a many meaning word. I mean, it can mean, you know, when you pitch about like a ship pitches in the sea, it goes wonky, it goes from side to side with the waves. That's pitching and tossing, and so it can mean that too. I mean, you can find quite a few different. I did look enough to see that there was like 10 different definitions that they had for it as a noun on dictionary.com. So it isn't like we don't have a big choice.
Yeah. I think Rob meant like at a baseball game, what the person up on the mound does when there's somebody up to bat.
Only the brilliant pitcher, though.
He tosses that torch into the batter, and the batter just seizes it and knocks it to the top of the roof. That's Terry's basic thought. Sorry, Terry.
Yeah, I don't think that it was that he was dissatisfied. He said, sure, let it go to the radio so that, you know, others might consider this question.
Oh, yeah,
so,
that's a thought. Uh-huh.
In addition to basically kind of reiterating what Austin said about pitch having the meaning of height or depth of a tone, like frequency, harmonic, modulation rate, et cetera, there's also, like, I kind of see it as a positioning in three-dimensional space, including its degree of inclination or its, and I think Austin already said this too, highest point or greatest height, synonymous to tilt, angle, degree, gradient, incline, slant, slope, et cetera. And I think that ties into holding the torch above the head as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think Ra, though, didn't use it in a literal sense to convey that a light beam shines down from the top of the head, but more to paint a visual image to describe the situation in a figurative or evocative way. And I lean in the direction that you were going, Carla, and kind of conceive it as relative physical location, because they say it is held high above such a one. And so I see it as light shining into the situation with truth and clarity. And in that light, then all is seen, as Ra says, quote, in an ambiance of challenges offered and opportunities to come. Because in this light, all is seen as one, all is seen as well, and all catalyst is revealed in the light as material designed to assist your spiritual evolution, even and especially that which seems most difficult. There's nothing that's against you anymore. The whole thing is geared to be working for you, especially the tough things. So as such, there's no emotional reactivity. There's no response of fear or rejection or panic or doubt or anxiety or revulsion, etc. The moment is embraced as it is. And then it's not distorted because of these energies of fear, et cetera, but it's seen clearly for what it is, as part of the self, and therefore can be accepted as part of the self. And there's an interesting correlation, too, in terms of held high above such a one, and that's the correlation to what Ra describes as the raising of the locus of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Locus is the word that they use?
Yes.
As the energy moves, as the seeker
goes towards the gateway to intelligent infinity.
Yeah, as the seeker seeks their experience and it moves up the chakra system so that the focal point, the center of gravity of the entity, so to speak, moves from green ray to blue ray, then to indigo. And then when the inner and outer natures meet at the highest, quote-unquote, point of the entity, the highest chakra node, so that the entity has become, you know, for the most part, transparent and one, then they would be, as if to say, they would be looking down from that high chakra. The light would be held high above such a one.
Yes.
Jim, did you have anything to add about this question?
Nothing original. You guys have all covered it very well.
I'm really glad that Terry asked us to send this onto the radio show, because this is one of my favorite quotes from Ra. I think it really speaks to where we are headed in our spiritual path when we expand our awareness and acceptance. It's showing that we don't necessarily escape from what Ra calls the gusts, flurries, and blizzards of quick and cruel catalysts. We're still in this third density environment, and things happen to us. Seemingly negative things can happen to us, but we don't approach them in the same way that we used to. Where they used to be things that would scare us or make us run, they are then seen as challenges and opportunities for more growth, opportunity to spread more love and spread more light, more truth to any situation. I really, really like this quote.
I do too. I've referred to it in my mind quite often during this 3 years where I've been isolated in a bed and have not been able to, well, I can't walk anyway, but I used to get around really well in a wheelchair. You know, go out to lunch with my friends and so forth, and people sling the wheelchair in the back of the car and off we go, and, you know. But I can't do that right now. I need to stay right here, pretty still, and be patient. And I do see this as a tremendous opportunity, a learning opportunity of the highest order. It involves my whole self and everything that I see as myself, because I can't be the self that I was used to for so long. Quick and sharp and you know, with it, able to concentrate for long periods of time. Because of the pain pills, my concentration is, it's okay, but it wears out after a few minutes, and I need to take a break and gather my strength. Well, you know, if you do that repeatedly and just do it, it's not bad. It's just what is, you know. But when I forget that, then I you know, invoke that great pitch of light over my head and like stand in the doorway to the gateway to intelligent infinity and let that door open a little bit and let that light come on down and show me that all is well and all will be well. And then I am okay. Jim and I have had a marvelous adventure instead of having a difficult ordeal. It's been a fun thing for us, and we've used the opportunity to grow much closer than we ever could any other way, because he is so intimately involved in helping me to get through the day with physical difficulties and so forth that he has to help me with pretty much nonstop through the day. So I think that meaning, you know, that quote means a lot to me too.
Three things come to my mind to reply to what you guys just said. And the first is that I recall a Q&A with Eckhart Tolle, and somebody asked him, you know, as I evolve or if I become enlightened, et cetera, will bad things still happen? And then he responds first by saying, who's to say what is good and bad? I mean, do you know what bad actually is, et cetera? Because that which is perceived as bad, that which you want to run away from or reject may actually, or it probably is, serving your growth, et cetera, and should be faced and embraced. And this ties into what the point you guys are making, which I think is awesome, is that the focus, the instrumental word here is interpretation. Ra says somewhere in that quote about interpretation. And that being that we bring an interpretation to our life catalyst. The catalyst doesn't come to us and say, this is what I mean, this is what I'm here for, etc. It's our interpretation, and the better our interpretation, the clearer our interpretation, the more it's seen, as Ra said, with in the ambiance of challenges offered. And like Carla is saying, as it's applied in her life, I think that's an excellent example. I mean, Carla, you could look at your current situation and say, I've given so much of my life. I've served to my highest and best, and you know, this is what happens to me. Screw this.
yeah, this is how you repay me, Lord. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm checking out. Like,
yeah, that's a possible interpretation for sure.
Yeah, but you don't. You interpret it in a way that says this is as it is, and I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to love it. And there are other interpretations available to you, but
yes.
And,
never far off.
the third idea that just came to my mind, and I don't know if it has any bearing whatsoever, but it seems creative, and that's that Trish and I have been watching the Cosmos series, which Neil deGrasse Tyson is doing, and it's science 101, but I'm not too much of a science guy, so it's all amazing to me. And he was talking about how you can, there's a discipline called spectrography, thank you. you can bounce light off of any object in the universe, and depending on how it reflects back, and if you run it through some kind of prism device, and don't quote me exactly on how this works, but the way it bounces back light, it presents a sort of barcode almost. If you run that reflected light back through a prism and you see the red through violet spectrum, there'll be certain vertical lines that are missing in that spectrum. And each item in the universe, depending on its composition and what elements it contains, et cetera, will have different, the bars will be missing.
Different signatures.
Yeah, different signatures. So you can tell what anything is by bouncing physical light off of it, and they've been able to use this technique, I guess, to tell like what planets are composed of, and, et cetera. And it just occurred to me that this light that Ra is describing, that's held high above one, isn't of course a physical light, but the metaphysical light. And as you were saying, Carla, you kind of open up the gateway to intelligent infinity, and that light comes through. So this is the light, the clearest light, and it shines through, and it tells you what the moment actually is. And that
what
is
what the spectrograph is. Yeah.
Yeah, you get that and that signature back, and what it says is, what it doesn't say is separation. It shows that this is all one. This is you. This is the self, et cetera. In any way you could describe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a great point.
Very interesting. I'd imagine this is a common issue with our translators. See, our translators, all volunteers, admire them a lot because Ra's wording, their use of words and their grammar is just so complex and so weird sometimes. And this is a great example of how this can be complicated to translate this material into another language.
Yes.
I admire you all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine how they do it.
Well, just the simple identification of I am Ra, I understand in some languages you can't say that.
Do they just, like, give the name in other languages?
Yeah, something, I think, is missing.
No.
I think it's Chinese. I'm not sure. I think that's who told me. That language does not have I.
All right. I think we've covered that question pretty well. Moving on to the next one, submitted by Jeremy via the Bring Forth Forums. And he has two questions. The first one is, there were one or maybe two random channelings where an entity with the name Jesus Christ came through. I was curious as to the group's reaction to this sudden channeling and how it impacted them, but especially Carla.
Well, I was the channel. So I was receiving something. I challenged it in the name of Jesus the Christ, and obviously since the relationship as identity, there was no problem in saying, yes, I do come in the name of Jesus the Christ. It's always my challenge to any spirit before I accepted it. So I just let it run. And so I don't really have any reaction. I can't have any reaction to it except to say I did my honest best. And I don't have anything against an entity with that vibration or with that energy or, you know, with that barcode, with that signature coming through. I'm not sure if I think it's an entity or an energy, but I don't have any trouble with it per se. Being a Christian, I see why not.
According to Ra does say that the entity who was Jesus Christ does occasionally speak through channels. And some really popular channeled work, A Course in Miracles, I believed, is supposedly channeled by Jesus, from Jesus, however you would say that. And I've never read it. I don't have any endorsement, but I know a lot of people who have read it and feel
love
it's
it.
Very similar to The Law of One and very high-quality information. And I've actually read a few other, in my investigations of channelings, a few other channelings supposedly coming from Jesus that all seemed to have the same kind of flavor with them. At least they were all sort of similar in energy, and they were all, in my opinion, decent quality. So I think that it's totally possible that what you were channeling was the entity known as Jesus that serves by channel now.
Hmm. Okay. Mick, what do you think? Because you were there.
Well, as far as the group response, we've had a lot of different entities channel through over the years, and I think in general the group pretty much looks at each piece of information and tries to find a way to use it in the life pattern, or we've never gotten too, I guess, overly excited about anything. We just kind of take it for what it might be useful for in our own life patterns, no matter who the supposed source is. So I think it was probably looked at just in that fashion and used as all other information has been in our group.
I do want to explain just something in general that addresses why at the beginning were there many different entities that came through, and some of them, you know, really nice ones that came through repeatedly. And after Kuo came through, then every time I asked who wanted to speak, the only voice I heard was Kuo. And I'm not saying I heard a voice. I'm saying I was impressed with the concept of someone named Kuo. And the reason was my method of tuning. I always did the same challenge. I mean, I'm a Christian. I just say, can you say Jesus is Lord? And if they can't say it, you know. I did ask at one point about that point, and Ross said, well, if they can't say it, the reason is because metaphysically that statement of, you know, who I am and how I challenge, if it's honest, if it's real, it's like a brick wall. It's a, you know, that thought is very real in time space. But before I had the raw contact, I was pretty much open, and whoever came closest to the vibration I was able to get by my tuning, that's who I picked up. Sometimes, mostly I think it was Hatan, and I adored Latui, and I always hoped for Latui to come through. And Latos came through when there were people trying to learn how to channel. So those three were sort of a triumvirate in the early days. But others came through too, some delightful ones. And after I found out from Ra that it was very important to me not to go into trance, I did my tuning and set my intention by saying I ask for the highest and best contact that I can carry in a stable and conscious manner of the vibration of Jesus the Christ. And when Kuo started coming through and they were asked as to who they were, they explained that three social memory complexes, one of fourth density, one of fifth density, and one of sixth density, Hatan, Latui, and Ra, with Latui doing the speaking, which protected me from the necessity to go into trance. I never got Ra except in trance, so I couldn't get Ra. Physically impossible. So Latui needed to be the one that spoke, and Hatan pretty much just vibrated unconditional love the whole time and held the battery for them. So they had shaped their principle, they called themselves a principle, to meet my request. That was my intention, that was my request. I was asking a very specific thing. And they shaped their energy to be compatible with mine. So, you know, it was like having a tailor come in and alter and fit and, you know, hem and everything and get it just right. And, you know, once you get something that's just right, you're not going to pick up something that's not quite that, that you know, you're just not going to do it. So that's why I have nothing but Kuo for the most part, unless somebody asks for Hatan. Romy, bless his heart, who was always a faithful attendee until this last year where he moved to help his mother in her old age. And wonderful for him to do that. But, oh, we miss him. Anyway, he would sometimes ask for Hatan. He loved Hatan. And I must say Hatan gave beautiful channelings filled with love. Just wonderful. So, but maybe not so much intellectual. More of the heart. Latui was fifth density, which is wisdom, and so there was all that humor and intellect going for Latui as a speaker. And we're so happy that they did that for us. And I look forward to getting back to channeling. And I imagine I will still pick up Kuo. Why not?
I have nothing to add to that question.
All right. Jeremy has a second question. He asks, have you all ever felt that it was almost planned to have wanderers who have awakened be so spread out? It seems very rare to find wanderers in the same part of the state or country, let alone the same city. So I was curious if the group ever came up with a hypothesis regarding this, or do they think it's a random event?
I don't think it's random. I think it's the demographic. I mean, how many wanderers and how many the population. And if you want to cover the globe fairly, you know, uniformly, as far as getting as much of the globe vibrated by wanderers as possible to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth, it made sense to have them spread out. And that's all I ever thought. Jim, what do you think?
Well, I guess we've heard over the years from different people that said that they feel isolated where they are. And that suggests what Jeremy's saying, that wanderers are spread out. What you said makes sense, too, that you know we would need to be able to cover the globe in a certain way. And in this age, though, with our ability to communicate electronically, that may not be so true. But I think they probably are spread out, and we're all trying to help wake each other up.
And maybe it's that... It's just in the nature of wanderers to feel isolated. They're going to feel isolated. You know, it seems to be part of a syndrome that you could call the wanderers' woes.
I think that makes a lot of sense, especially what you were saying, Carla, about trying to cover the globe to lighten the entire vibration, both in a physical and a metaphysical sense. Ra talks about the interaction of the electromagnetic field of the Earth with us and our effects on the Earth, our own unique racial consciousness, our mass unconsciousness, interacts with the Earth in certain ways and changes the actual magnetic field of the Earth, can balance it and then balance it. And so I would figure if wanderers were sort of concentrated in different areas and didn't go to other areas, that it would be a little imbalanced in the healing of that magnetic sphere. And also in a metaphysical sense, we're here, as you have often said, Carla, wanderers are here to love, most basically. Some have jobs and tasks that they came here to accomplish, but we're all here to love the experience that we are experiencing. And I think that it's important that every experience that is available on Earth receive that attention from the wanderers, because there's different experience available to somebody on this part of the globe than there is on the other part of the globe. And both of those experiences need this love that the wanderers have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, did you have anything to add to that one?
Austin, you mentioned the electromagnetic web, or the just energetic web of Earth. Did you tie that to birthing of fourth density?
Oh, yeah, I did, actually.
Okay,
when
cool.
I wrote out what I said, that I forgot to touch on it. We're supposedly attempting to birth a fourth density sphere, which will require this magnetic realignment, and it's having some trouble because of the consciousness of our people, supposedly. There's still a lot of shadow being played out and unrealized, and that is part of what needs the Wanderer's love, is that shadow that is sort of holding our third density sphere in place and keeping the fourth density sphere from fully manifesting. And as far as I understand it from Ra, they didn't go too deep into the technical details, but it is that magnetic sphere, once it is realigned, that receives the fourth density vibrations. And so I imagine that that is part of what Wanderers are doing, as well as in their love, realigning that sphere to the fourth density vibrations.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest, is that it was intentional that they would be spread out, both for other selves' reasons to love other selves, but also to assist with what Ra says is, I think they said it was the true emergency, was the difficulty with the birthing of fourth density. So, you know, the Wanderers are here for the planet as well, to lighten that planetary vibration. At the same time, we have to, I think, add a qualifier here and say that the Wanderers we're talking about are awakened Wanderers, likely, which are a smaller percentage within an already small demographic. So there may be greater concentrations of Wanderers the world over, but, you know, the majority of them, I think that's a safe assumption to make, the majority of them are still asleep at the wheel and not aware of their origins or of their mission, though likely they would be fairly open-hearted people. But I would also imagine, too, that there are mission-specific instances where there are a concentration of wanderers or a collection of wanderers. I think there's four wanderers in this house right now who have come
and
together.
And look how Mick and Jim and I came together. So
you're Don and...
It happened. I mean, yeah. Jim and Don and I came together.
Yeah.
I don't think that was random at all. I don't feel that that was at all random.
Oh, no, by no means. Especially when you look at your own biography and see how there were many talents that you've had and many different roads you could have taken, but life seemed to shut one door or nudge you in the other direction until eventually, you know, it led you to Don and then channeling and then the Ra contact, et cetera, in this particular life. So it seems life had conspired with you to lead you in this direction.
But only after a long period of initiation.
Oh, yeah. And my final thought that I had to offer was sparked by what Carla said when she mentioned that wanderers, even if they weren't geographically isolated, that they would nevertheless feel isolated just being here. And I think, you know, that's a result of, as has been talked about, elsewhere, the mismatch in the vibrations between this third density experience and the Wanderer's home density experience. And just to let my imagination run a little bit, the Wanderer's home density experience, I guess not even imagination, because there's testimony to this fact that the Wanderer's home density is one of resounding harmony. I mean, there is total security, total safety, total sense that the environment is for one, that the Creator is made of love, and I am made of love, and love is everywhere. And then here they are in this density, and even without mistreatment from other people per se, the environment does not communicate that. There's a sense that the environment may even be inimical to one's growth and survival.
I think in the West it is more than in the East. In the East, there's a more you know, resounding poverty and starvation and all of the difficulties that impress one with the transient nature of humankind. And that opens up the spirit, whereas we in the West are bottle-fed from babyhood on the subtext that we are the lucky ones, we are Americans, we are better than anybody, and we you know, work harder and do better, and the earth is ours, and, you know, we are the cops of the world, and, you know, all this stuff that has happened since the American Empire came into being. And I think we're all, you know, seized by fear. We're taught, you know, oh, there's danger out there. Oh, watch out, there's a boogeyman under the bed, you know. it's a dangerous world, and we have to be fearful. And, you know, Christianity, when looked at from the Old Testament viewpoint, is terrifying. I mean, there's fear coming at us from everywhere that we need to be careful, because people want what we have, and because we have to be controlled, and we have to, you know, all these the things that we're taught as kids. I think we in the West have a tendency to be pretty well taken up by fear, and not ever get to the point where, you know, all is acceptance and quietude and, you know, the basic Buddhist standpoint where, yeah, there's suffering. Yeah, and then there's death, let me tell you. So, you know, get with the program, and then they give you, you know, all these paths to work to get past that realization of a difficult environment. And I think it's more realistic in its own way than the Western way that says, you know, you only have this one chance and then you're dead forever. You may go to hell unless you shape up and do right. And, you know, the definition of right is very skewed often.
Yeah, I think one can look at the environment here and safely conclude that the environment is not for one, especially in consideration of how difficult and often traumatic the actual outer circumstances are. And Ra even described our experience as a metaphysical darkness. So the Wanderer moves from a realm of light to one where, even with the joy of companions and loving people around them, if they do have the benefit of that, they're nevertheless in waters that feel or are perceived to be dark and cold. That is, unless they're holding that light high above the head. But
that's a great pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, but otherwise, I think that's why Ra described the common theme of a crippling sense or severe sense of alienation among wanderers.
We have a live caller waiting to get on air. We have a little less than 10 minutes left, so we'll go ahead and take it. A caller from area code 720. You are now on the air. Welcome to the show. Who are we talking to?
Hi there. This is Michael. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
we can hear you, Michael.
Hey, how are you? I'll keep it quick. You guys were talking about other channeled entities, and I wanted to ask you. I don't know if you've talked about it before, but I've recently been reading the Seth material by Jane Roberts, and I know that in the Law of One they mention it just once, but I was wondering if you could give me your personal opinion on that book.
Well, yeah, actually, we discussed this last week, I believe, was it?
Or the week before, yeah, one or the other.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't listening.
Oh, no, it's okay. It's absolutely fine. We talked a little bit about Seth. I think nobody here really has a lot of experience with the Seth material. We know a lot of people who do and have had very positive experiences with it. And so we didn't really have a whole lot to offer, but you could probably check it out. It should be in the show description in either the last episode or the week before that. It was near the end of the episode, I believe. We just had a few short words to say.
Yeah, our consensus conclusion was that it was like, though we couldn't be certain, of course, but just in pondering the matter, our consensus conclusion was that it was likely an inner planes sort of entity and not an outer planes, higher density source, but absolutely positively oriented.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that anything but positive, considering the people that I know that have gotten so much out of it. They're great people, and I respect their discernment a lot, and they respect the Seth material a lot, so I think it is positive material.
And we would always offer an opinion with the disclaimer that, of course, we are not authorities, and it's to the seeker's discernment to determine whether material is helpful or positive or negative for themselves.
It's a principle that we need to hold on to, and I realized that on an airplane. I had just read a certain channeling book, and I thought it was just bunk, absolute fake bunk, and I tossed it aside. On this airplane ride, the woman beside me was reading it, and she said that she was getting so much out of it, and it was just such a blessing to her. And I realized at that point that you cannot speak to give an opinion about channels other, you know, than the one that you're working with, because you don't know where that person is. You don't know what's going to help. So you really need to just say, well, check it out for yourself. Trust your discrimination. Trust your discernment. And we've stuck to that always. Jim, you actually have read several of the books.
I always enjoyed Seth, and I think the idea that Seth is probably interplanes is likely the case. Seth doesn't talk a lot about polarizing or making a choice, but talks about the nature of reality, basically how there's much more to it than we see, and that we are multidimensional beings as well, that there are various portions of ourselves that we've not accessed that we could access that would give us information helpful on our journey. So I always like Seth a lot. Adventures in Consciousness book, I think, was my favorite. Seth Speaks is the one most people have read. And there's some others as well.
Six or seven, yeah.
Yeah, the Psychological Aspects of Politics, I think, is one.
So there you go, and you can hear a little bit more on another episode, Michael, in our archives on the same website, blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. The archives should be readily accessible.
Great, thank you. And hey, real quick, Carla, that's really funny because I just started reading Seth Speaks on an airplane like a week ago, so that kind of is cool. And really, really quickly,
that's great.
Any of you,
I love it.
Nice.
Yeah,
great.
Any of you have
there.
An opinion? That Ra and Seth, like Ra and Set, both Egyptian deities, do you think that they may be connected in some way like that? Have you ever given that any thought?
I really never have, no.
Yeah, not knowing much about Seth, I don't know anybody who's connected them with Egyptian deities.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in, Michael. You're now back on mute. And I think, did you have something to say, Gary?
Yeah, I asked Austin if there was time, if
There's a little time.
Read an unrelated paragraph, or actually something related to last week. We were discussing basically realization of the infinite self, Buddha consciousness, etc. And Carla had kind posed basically the question, well, what about compassion? What about service? And I'd responded basically saying something regarding how one only gets to that consciousness, so to speak, by moving through the heart center, and unity consciousness necessarily includes love and compassion for others, etc. And there was a thought from Alan Watts' book, The Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are, that that came to mind. I couldn't find it at the time, so I have found it since, and I wanted to read it because it spoke to the situation. And Alan Watts is discussing really articulately and well, as he does, the nature of our situation and reality, and the nature of the one playing the game of being the many and forgetting itself. And then he goes on to say, and the bragging part of this paragraph doesn't apply to our conversation per se, but rather what Alan Watts then says. So Alan Watts says, anyone who brags about knowing this doesn't understand it, for he is only using the theory as a trick to maintain his illusion of separateness, a gimmick in a game of spiritual one-upmanship. Moreover, and this is where he gets into having compassion for other selves in the dream, moreover, such bragging is deeply offensive to those who do not understand and who honestly believe themselves to be lonely, individual spirits in a desperate and agonizing struggle for life. For all such, there must be a deep and unpatronizing compassion, even a special kind of reverence and respect, because after all, in them, the self is playing its most far-out and daring game, the game of having lost itself completely and of being in danger of some total and irremediable disaster. This is why Hindus do not shake hands on meeting, but put their palms together and bow in a gesture of reverence, honoring the Godhead in the stranger.
Very nice. Thank you for that, Gary. Any quick words before we close the show out?
My quick word is always the same. Folks, we love you all. I'm so glad you're listening. Thanks.
Alrighty. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. And thank you, Michael, for your call. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m., and we will talk with you then.
Haunting tone in a maze.